Blog Talk Radio. Hello, welcome to Spec Talk Radio. This is Karen Rand, your host, and today we are bringing together the Southeast private equity community to learn how to create wealth by creating jobs, by helping companies get and thriving and bringing innovation to market. And that's by investors learning about great entrepreneur opportunities and entrepreneurs learning about great ways to build their businesses and make themselves more attractive to the angel investor community. Speaking of which, it's interesting because we've had a lot of inquiries of late about the state of the angel investor community and what's happening with those folks on getting involved in angel investing. Are they in the market? Are they out of the market? So the we're going to explore that as a topic in the second part of our show today. In our first part of the show, we're going to interview two of the companies that will be participating in the NBA and I Investor Forum on February 11th, next Wednesday. We are excited about our event. We've moved towards a monthly format with our angel investors and getting some great response on that. I've got some great companies lined up, two of which you'll hear from today. So these are companies that are thriving, generating revenue, growing their revenues, looking for key financial partners to be able to take it to the next level. Of course, we won't be going into details about that. You got to come to the meeting or attend a follow-up session to get more information about that. But you'll get to hear from those folks and how they came up with their innovations and got into the marketplace. And then we will, in our second half of the show, we'll dive into what's really going on with the angels in the marketplace right now. So let me bring on my first guest today. This is Steve. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. This is Steve Anden with OnePack. This is a really exciting company. It's an environmental logistics technology company that specializes in the new regulatory-driven niche of electronic waste collection. They've got very large customers as their strategic partners and as their clients that they serve, and that's a growing pipeline for them. So, Steve, introduce our audience to what does it mean to a niche of electronic waste collection. Give us your elevator pitch about what you're all about.
Basically, as you may have read in the news quite frequently, there are new environmental regulations that were created by the EPA a couple of years ago that force electronics manufacturers to begin taking back what they produce at the end of the useful life, so that all of these computers, television sets, things like that, which are loaded with hazardous waste, which used to go into landfills, are no longer allowed to go that direction. And what that has done has created a new niche in the logistics market, which is that of collection. Many of the components now are being taken back for resale and remarketing so that they have an afterlife besides just being broken down for recyclable parts. But whether a unit is resold, remarketed, taken apart for parts, or purely recycled and melted down, one way or another, it has to be collected from the customer. And so we sort of have evolved into this niche of providing the management technology and processes to allow trucking and carrier companies to handle that process efficiently when they previously did not have any tools to do it.
Okay, well, I didn't realize it, and I'm guessing that a lot of folks probably didn't realize that the EPA was actually regulating that right now. So when is this for regular consumers, and when they go and they donate it, or they go to, I mean, what's the supply chain on that? Because I know when a big company kind of upgrades their computers and replaces them, they've got some sort of process that they use to dispose of those computers. But does it apply to everybody that has a computer?
Well, that's a very good question, Karen. There's a series of things happening simultaneously. The EPA passed a series of laws commonly known in our industry as the You Make It, You Take It regulations. Basically, it has a compliance period that is becoming stronger and stronger each year. The first piece of the legislation forces manufacturers to take back a certain percentage of what they produce in terms of tonnage with an increasing amount each year, and that's first directed at businesses. So say, for example, our largest client is Dell, and when Dell sells new computers to a business client, let's say, for example, they sell 100 new computers to a bank, they have to take back at least 100 old computers as a result. So that's sort of the first phase of it, that the businesses are involved and it's paid for by the manufacturers. The second phase that you'll see, which is going to take the next couple of years to evolve, is the consumer piece. Ultimately, what you will see is that for full compliance and sustainability, what the EPA wants is that the manufacturers will take back any piece of equipment, whether it's from a consumer or a business, so that, let's say, for example, you have a 5 or 7 year old computer in your basement that says Dell on it, that you will be able to just call Dell or go on Dell's website and be able to say, I'm done with this unit, come pick it up. And they will either, depending on the quantity, if it's just one and you had a consumer-oriented type of situation, you would receive a shipping supply kit with a prepaid, pre-addressed shipping label paid for by Dell. That's one of the things that we produce and run for them is a shipping kit program for returns. You would receive that in the mail. You'd drop in your old computer, and off it goes to the recycler. If you were a business, you would be able to, same thing, call the manufacturer and say, hey, your name is on the equipment. Come pick it up. And let's say you had 50 computers that are old. A truck would show up, and truck driver would pack up all the equipment, take it away, and that process of the truck showing up, the driver taking inventory, packing up, scanning serial numbers, all that is also what we do. We control that process, and we work with some big trucking companies to do it.
Okay, so wow, very interesting. And I know apparently this is a big business and growing business. How did you get started doing this?
Purely by accident. This is actually something a couple of years ago. I saw the need for shipping supplies for people that were reselling used equipment on eBay. I actually had ownership in a previous software company when we were selling some used equipment on eBay. And I remember saying at the time, you know, eBay should give you a box. You know, if you're putting something up for sale, you don't have the box that it came in. It would be nice to receive a complete, like a shipping kit in the mail while your item is for sale. And by the time it sells, off it goes. Just pack it up and off it goes. And anyway, that concept kept me awake at night for a while. I kept thinking about it, thinking, what do I know about packing and shipping? Nothing. What do I know about creating companies and programming things that will work like that? Well, that I knew something about. So I created an outsourced business with some manufacturers of shipping supplies and all of that, put together a company over the course of about a year that was originally just selling shipping supplies to people on eBay. I did a joint venture with eBay. And very quickly after we put that together with eBay, I started getting inquiries, referrals from executives at eBay to executives at the equipment manufacturers saying, hey, can we use these shipping kits that you produce? Can you add in a return label that will go to our recyclers because we need to use this concept for collection? I had no idea that at the time that the EPA was passing these laws and what kind of a market niche was being created, but I found out pretty quickly that really what I had created was not a shipping supply distribution company, but a collection mechanism for the e-waste industry. And it changed the whole flavor and nature of the business from being like a product-oriented approach to a service-oriented approach. And we've continued to evolve from there more into the management of large-scale pickups beyond just the one-at-a-time collections in boxes. It's great stuff. Very exciting.
Okay, so now when you mentioned this thing about eBay, I remember when eBay was kind of just really getting all of, you know, the craziness of a whole new trend online and all that stuff, and there was all this, there was a folklore about somebody that was making so much money selling packaging materials to eBay users. Was that you?
I wish I could say it was. I know who you're talking about. It was a company, small company that started mostly selling boxes and shipping supplies. Our niche was not just in the generic shipping supplies, but in the complete kit component, specifically around reselling these supplies together in a sort of a hybrid form factor that would be makes it really easy to pack computers and electronics. eBay was a great partner to start with, but it subsequently, the business of selling this type of a service to electronics manufacturers has dwarfed the demand, the eBay demand, and the margins are a heck of a lot better. In other words, I'd rather have one Dell than 50,000 individual customers on eBay to just want to buy some bubble wrap, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So now when you mentioned that you sort of expanded, so are you doing you're actually doing the logistics of the pickup and, you know, carting it off and, you know, the breakdown and all of that, that whole supply chain of movement of this, these
correct
items that need to be recycled and disposed of?
Right. Originally, what we were doing was having the shipping supply kits produced and distributed by an outsourced fulfillment center, but we quickly found that what customers like Dell wanted was sort of outside the box, so to speak. They wanted the tracking information, the management, the ability to be able to electronically dispatch orders to us to say, here are these, you know, 5,000 computers that need to be collected from 5,000 locations. Make sure the boxes get distributed, make sure there are return labels, give me the tracking numbers so I can track all this process online. So really, our niche has always been in the IT of managing the process, and originally it started off as just the one-at-a-time boxes, and since then it has evolved into managing large volume pickups, trucking companies. Our most exciting thing that we're doing right now is we have developed software for handheld tablet PCs for truck drivers to carry to be able to take inventory on site. So let's say, for example, you have 1,000 computers coming out of a large bank and they're all loaded with customer data and everything. The trucking and moving companies that go on site to pick this equipment up needed a digital mechanism to be able to scan all of the serial numbers, to photograph damage, say a complete on-site inventory, because you have to remember all of this equipment is used and old and it's not in new product packaging. They needed a way to be able to take a complete list of everything that was being picked up, both for environmental purposes and for security purposes because of the data on the drives. So we have developed a program where the truck drivers now carry a tablet PC where they can scan in all that information. It's wirelessly transmitted up to the web via cellular network. And our customers like Dell can log in and see everything that's being collected, have full accountability to the EPA and to their customer to say, here is the complete inventory of what was picked up. And we've partnered with one of the largest logistics companies in the world, NYK Logistics, and we're in the midst right now of a national rollout of this technology. We've started in the state of Texas, and we're essentially over the next few months going to be blanketing the country with these scanners. We're training. We have an online training program for their truck drivers. We basically will be training approximately 3,000 truck drivers and 80 of their salespeople to go out and sell this. And it's going along really well. It's really exciting stuff.
So, okay, so now in a scenario like that, is the trucking company your customer, or Dell is your customer and requires the trucking company to do that, or a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both. In Dell's case, Dell happens to be our customer, and we act as sort of the prime contractor providing the logistics management and technology, and we outsource the trucking company to do the heavy lifting, so to speak. In other scenarios, the trucking company actually acts as the prime, you know, for their customers, because of course the big trucking company has other huge customers that we want to serve and that they want to serve using our technology, and they will be the prime contractor as to provide all the sort of the heavy lifting first, and then they pay us for use of the technology. So the relationship sort of goes two ways depending on whose customer it is that's brought into the program. We're selling sort of a unified program. Our company and their company is selling the same thing, and whoever brings in the customer sort of acts as the prime.
Okay, so now do you have competition in this space? I mean, or this seems to, it's definitely a niche segment, so are there bigger companies that are trying to fit into it, and you have the total solution? Talk about the competitive landscape.
Basically, it's such a tight niche. I haven't been able to find anybody who does exactly what we do, which is why we've been able to, as a little startup company, attract clients like Dell and Nokia and HP, big organizations all of a sudden have a need, and they say, who can do this for us? Normally, enormous companies like that would never work with a little startup. They're too concerned that you're going to go out of business. But in that, we had something that was so unique, we were able to get big clients like that. There are a couple of companies that do forward logistics software, meaning distribution, traditional supply chain and distribution software management, like for warehouses and for dispatching trucks. Our segment is really what they call reverse logistics or collection, and we have not been able to find any IT-related company that is doing reverse logistics management like we are. It's a great niche to be in. A couple of the big logistics companies, the trucking companies themselves, have made attempts to do what we're doing, but they have not succeeded in it because it's not what they do. Basically what I mean is a couple of the trucking companies and moving companies have recognized that when they send people on site to do a moving job or a pickup and all of the items that they're picking up need to be inventoried, they recognize that they needed a way to document and control that. In that those companies are traditionally low-tech, the best that they've been able to come up with is sending somebody on site with a clipboard and a pen and write down serial numbers and write down everything that's being picked up and then, you know, fax that back to their station and have somebody type it into a spreadsheet. Naturally, that process is slow, it's expensive, it's loaded with errors. So this is a technology that can be deployed further and further in the moving and transportation industry, not only for what we're using it for now, which is to collect computers and electronic waste, but there's a lot more it can be used for, such as keeping track of inventory for, say, an office-to-office move. You know, you might have a company with 100 computers that needs to move offices, and they need to track it that way. A lot of different applications, but we're sort of sticking to our knitting right now and staying focused on the e-waste management because it is a really burgeoning, exploding, I would say, niche because of the new regulation.
Okay, so the EPA doesn't really say how it needs to be done. They just want the information that it has been done. So your real sort of value proposition to the marketplace is that not only do you coordinate it and do it, but because of your software and the high-tech approach to it, you're able to offer an efficiency model that is really makes it painless for some of these big companies to meet their EPA requirements.
That's exactly right. We have a very unique, it is unique. I won't say very unique. It is unique, meaning there's nothing else like it in the industry. We produce what is called a certificate of collection, and that essentially allows everybody involved in the process to be able to formally document to say what was picked up at the origin is what was delivered to the destination. We give them a complete chain of custody, cross signatures from the customer to the recycler, complete digital inventory of everything that was collected. So we are verifying the process to be able to help the manufacturers who are accountable to the EPA be able to say, here's the complete list of serial numbers that was picked up. We're compliant. Right now in the industry, recyclers have to provide what's called a certificate of destruction, which says this: we received this unit and we recycled it with zero landfill, et cetera. But they didn't have anything sort of further up the supply chain to guarantee that what was picked up from the customer is actually what had arrived at the recycling plant before it was recycled. So we took that opportunity to sort of clone the concept of a certificate, and instead of a certificate of destruction, we provide a certificate of collection further up the supply chain, so they then have end-to-end accountability that what left your office was ultimately received by the recycler, and then the recycler processed it appropriately to allow the manufacturers full compliance with the EPA.
Okay, well, as we get ready to wrap up here, I would like to, I know, I guess you may not be able to talk about your revenues as they are right now because you're a private company, although I know, I believe you're actually have some, I'm not sure how much we can talk about what's going on with your Toronto.
I actually can tell you quickly what that is. We actually are a fully reporting company for public listing in Canada on the Toronto Exchange. We are going to be filing, we're fully reporting, we're not trading yet. We're going to be filing to list in the United States sometime this year. We expect a bulletin board listing by third quarter. We do have a couple of years of operation and audited financials all in place. We're presently doing about $100,000 a month in revenue, and would anticipate for 2009 somewhere be, I hate to make solid projections, it's so hard in a nascent industry, but between $2 and $4 million in revenue in this upcoming year. We have doubled and redoubled revenues during the last, basically we've been in, this is our third year in operation, and each year we have doubled and redoubled revenues from year to year.
That's terrific.
So we're basically gaining traction right now. We've gone through the painful seed and startup stage of getting our act together, but we're now a fully reporting, transparent entity with audited financials and business processes in place for scalability, and we're now getting traction in the really solid traction in the revenue department. We've gained some big customers and key agreements, and we're now just beginning our nationwide ramp up.
Okay, terrific. So as we wrap up here, Steve, we're talking with Steve Anden with OnePack, that's O-N-E-P-A-K, and soon we'll have information from an investor standpoint up on the LaunchFN website, and you can go to the LaunchFN.com website on the Contact Us page to request more information or to get introduced to Steve. But Steve, go ahead and share with folks how they can go maybe to your website and get more information, or how they would learn more about specifically your opportunity, your business and the services that you offer.
Sure. Our website is onepack.com, O-N-E-P-A-K.com. Anybody could feel free to get a hold of me at any time. My office phone number is 508-247-9200, or email me at any time directly at Steve. S-T-E-V-E dot Anden, A-N-D-O-N, at onepack.com.
Okay, terrific. And thank you so much for being on the show. Looking forward to having you at our investor event next week. And have a very great weekend.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend as well.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A little music interlude here for a second. I bring on the next caller. Okay, welcome. Is this Peggy that we have on the line here?
Yes. I'm sorry, I was holding before listening to this. I guess I should have hit one sooner.
No. You're good. I just was trying to wrap up that call and bring you on. We got started a little bit late on that one. So with us right now is Peggy Fisher with Tire Stamp. Tire Stamp is a leading tire data analytics company. They have Tire Vigilant is your telematics service?
Yes, our product line, our brand is Tire Vigil, and
go ahead. Tell us what you guys do.
Okay, Tire Stamp provides commercial fleets with the visibility they need to proactively maintain their tires. What I mean by this is we give fleet managers alerts and reports that they need to address tire problems and keep their tires properly maintained so they can reduce emergency breakdowns, labor associated with tire maintenance, improve fuel economy, improve tire life and tread mileage, as well as safety. This is a really big issue to fleets because tires and costs associated with them are their second highest vehicle operating cost after fuel, which is so naturally tires are a budget item for every fleet.
So how do they get their tell us a little bit more about how it works and how it produces a return on investment to your customer.
Okay. Well, the way Tire Vigil works is it combines three technologies. The first is tire pressure monitoring systems. We use what we call TPMS sensors inside the tire, which gather tire temperature and pressure information. And we combine that with telematics devices that basically make a phone call off the vehicle and send this information to our servers. Tire Stamp has produced a hardware box that bridges the sensor data to the telematics box, basically translates that data into a language the telematics box can understand, and the telematics box then sends the data to our servers. We then analyze the data. We convert the temperature, the pressure to what we call cold inflation pressure by utilizing the ambient temperature and tire temperature. So we get a very accurate cold inflation pressure. What this does is it eliminates a lot of false alarms that other TPMS systems are plagued with. After we analyze the data, if there is a problem with the tire, we send an alert to anyone that the fleet would like the alert sent to. That could be the driver, it could be the fleet manager, could be the technician in the garage, or could be the dispatcher, anybody that the fleet wants. We also provide a battery of reports that the fleets can choose from. They can have them automatically sent to them, or they can go out on our portal and pull them down on demand whenever they'd like. It's very customizable for the fleet, and the fleet can make any changes or make any requests with just a click of a mouse. So
this is dynamic, the changes that it's making. It connects wirelessly up to a cloud in the sky and comes back to your servers?
Yes, exactly. It's done basically over the Internet, and so the changes that fleets make are done there, and then we can get any information that if we want to make changes on the vehicle itself by upgrading the system, we can do that over the air as well and on the fly.
Wow.
So the vehicle does not have to be in front of you. It can be 1,000 miles away driving down the road, and these things automatically happen. So what the big thing is, fleets can basically see what their tires are doing. They know what their tires are doing, even though they're hundreds of miles away. So if there is a problem, they can advise the driver to take action. The thing that's different about our system is from other tire pressure monitoring systems is that it's not driver-centric, where others are. They only advise the driver, you have a problem. But most truck drivers don't believe that they're responsible for vehicle maintenance, including tires. The lights that come on the dash are really a nuisance to them, and they really don't want to be bothered. They just want to deliver the freight from point A to point B. We get this information off the vehicle to people who care about their tires, who are paying for them, who need to keep them up and running, and need to have the freight delivered on time so they're not sitting by the side of the road broke down. We can, by delivering this information to them, we can have, for example, the dispatcher advise the driver that he's picked up a nail, he's got a slow leak, stop at the next truck stop. And that's
the advantage. Wow. I was just thinking it was just, you know, tire pressure, so they're going to go do some routine maintenance. But that's very interesting because, I mean, and that I could see that also benefiting from a DOT standpoint because, you know, the whole when they get the tires that rip off of the 18-wheelers and are in the road, it causes road hazards and all kinds of things. So
Well, exactly.
How did you guys develop this solution?
Excuse me?
I said, how did you develop this solution?
Well, this solution was first developed by the founders of TireStamp, who were Scott Feagan, our CEO, and Sean Boyle, our chief technology officer. Scott was involved with another company up in Canada that produced radio frequency identification devices. And he was asked by a fleet up there who was having theft problems with their tires to develop what we call an RFID for tires. They worked on this problem, but Scott soon found that theft was not a big problem for most fleets. Most fleets, really, their problems stemmed from maintaining their tires. So he and Sean came up with the idea of creating Tire Vigil, which is a subscription service that stays with the customer long after he's bought the equipment needed and continues to provide alerts to fleet management.
Okay, so and how long have you guys been, how long did it take to develop it, and how long have you been in the market selling this, and what's your pipeline look like?
Well, the company was started in 2003 with the idea of developing this product, and they were in stealth mode for about 4.5 years doing R&D, both for hardware and for software, because our software is a huge back-end solution. So we began selling this product in around late 2006, early 2007, with the introduction of our Tire Vigil Pro product. And this product was designed for single-powered units like trucks and buses. So we focused our efforts on the utility market, refuse, motor coaches, school bus, and transit buses. Currently, today we've got major fleets in all of those segments who are our fleet accounts. Last year, in the spring, we introduced Tire Vigil in Tow, which is a product geared for trailers. And it's designed for trailers that are hooked to tractors, but also it works when they are unhooked and don't have the tractor power source to power the system. So this product has its own battery that lasts about 10 years and can be recharged. It's a rechargeable battery. If a trailer is sitting behind Walmart for 3 weeks, it still reports its tire pressures and any problems that it's having, so that before a fleet dispatches a tractor to pick up that trailer, it knows if that trailer needs tire service before the tractor is even dispatched. So that saves a lot of time and productivity as well. So by having Tire Vigil in Tow, that opened up the tractor trailer over the road market to us. And so now we are focusing the sale of that product on truckload fleets in that market.
Okay, so can you talk a little bit about some of your customers, the big ones, small ones?
Well, we've got, like I said, we have customers in all those market segments that I mentioned. We have in the package market, I cannot tell who the customer is, but obviously, it's a large package delivery company. We have several fleets in the refuse market that are our accounts, and our transit system. We have a couple transit systems that are working with us as well. Two in Canada are very large and are completing their rollout of Tire Vigil Pro.
That's great. So, what's your competitive landscape? Is there anybody else out there doing the thing? I've heard of a company that has a aftermarket saying that that you attach to your tires that adjust the pressures, but it doesn't have near the capabilities as what you've described to assess a whole variety of things that might have gone wrong when it comes to tire pressure.
Well, the tire pressure monitoring systems that are out there would be our closest competition, but they're not doing exactly what we do. We basically use their sensors and go way beyond their capabilities. What's really exciting about our product is that we're the first who can provide tire mileage in addition to pressure and temperature. For years, fleets have wanted tire pressure monitoring systems to provide them with pressure, temperature, mileage, and tire identification so that they could track their tires from cradle to grave. We deliver all those things, plus some additional things. We can identify the differences in dual tire pressure. Dual tires are when you have two tires side by side on an axle end. If you have a difference in pressure between those two tires, as little as 2 psi, that can set up irregular wear, which decreases the amount of tread mileage that you'll get. We can also identify when you have a heat issue on an axle end because we compare the heat in all the axle ends on the vehicle. If one should spike, could be due to the tires running underinflated, or it could be due to a dragging brake or a frozen wheel bearing. We can identify that and send an alert to management telling them you've got a problem on that axle end. We can't tell them exactly what that problem is, but we can say there's a serious issue there. Check it out. And what they can, by fixing that dragging brake, they can prevent a tire fire, and by addressing that frozen wheel bearing, they can prevent a wheel off where the dual tires and the hub together come off the vehicle as the vehicle's running down the road. That's 750 pounds of hardware coming off that if it collides with the vehicle, it's going to be a bad news for that vehicle. So
yeah,
we,
that's what I was thinking about when you were mentioning that before. So
we can really go do a whole lot more than just TPMS. The other thing is we get it off the vehicle and away from just advising the driver, and we can maintain a whole history of that tire's maintenance and the things that have happened to that tire. So we can track the tire from cradle to grave.
So now in my former years with IBM, I worked on some projects that used that were trying to use wireless and telemetrics and things like that, primarily for monitoring the engine and routing, and they were speeding and they were doing various other, you know, things that the owner of the trucking company wanted to know about. So do you integrate with those kind of solutions, or is that an expansion plan to be able to offer those kind of things in the future, or how do you relate to that segment of the monitoring of the vehicles?
Well, the companies that do those things, they're telematics application providers, are partners. We partner with them and provide them the ability to offer their customers a tire pressure monitoring solution as well. So if there are companies in that market like NetworkCar, PeopleNet, Qualcomm, those guys do those things, and by partnering with us, we provide them with a white label product, if you will, for TPMS, which is our tire visual.
They private label it as one of their solutions.
Yes.
Ah, terrific. Okay, well, great. Well,
the other thing that we've just come out with is a feature that we call Locator, which is a mapping feature. And for those fleets who don't have a telematics service provider but want to know where their vehicles are and they're using Tire Vigil, they can not only know that their truck has a problem, and they can now find out exactly where their truck is by just opening up the mapping feature and seeing that their vehicle is located right at this location. By doing that, they can also layer on where the closest service provider is to them and direct their driver to that location. So
okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So for those people who don't want any other telematics service provider offerings, we can provide tire pressure monitoring solution as well as a mapping feature.
Okay, so, well, as we begin to wrap up here, thank you so much for being on the call, Peggy. And we're going to tell folks how they can go about finding more information about your solution. So give them your website or any other contact information you'd like.
Oh, sure, yes. The Tire Stamp website is www.tirestamp, T-I-R-E-S-T-A-M-P, tirestamp.com. And I'd just like to say, Karen, how excited Tire Stamp is to be part of the MBA Investor Forum. And Scott Feagan will be there representing Tire Stamp, and he'll be delighted to speak with any investors in attendance.
Okay, terrific. Yep, we're excited to have you there. And any investors that are listening to this, they can we should have the Tire Stamp profile up shortly on our website at launchfn.com, but you can also on that same website go to the Contact Us page and request specific information, and we'll either get you the information to come to the event on the 11th, or the information we'll be doing with a follow-up GoToMeeting investor briefing that we'll be doing after that event for those investors that attended and any other investors that weren't able to attend that event. So, again, Peggy, thank you for taking time out of your day to come and join us on Spec Talk Radio. And appreciate you being here and sharing some of the exciting things that are going on with your company. And looking forward to hearing the whole story next week at the event. So,
thank you so much.
Have a great day. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye.
We're going to roll into our final segment here. Let me play a little music. Okay, this is Karen Rands with Spec Talk Radio here for part two of today's segment. Again, if you're tuning in now or just listening to this in the replay, Spec Talk Radio is the Southeast Private Equity Community's radio show that brings together entrepreneurs and investors in the Southeast and beyond to learn how to create wealth through bringing innovation to the marketplace with investors investing in early stage companies and creating those jobs. And we are believers that we have the ability to be economic architects, to mandate a turnaround. And one of the best ways to do that is through helping these early stage companies that have these incredible innovative products get to market and grow, bringing capital and needed experience and resources to them so that they can be highly successful. Earlier in the show, we heard from two of the companies that will be at our investor event next week that both are, you know, very different, but clearly both are doing well in their areas that are needed in the marketplace and probably won't be impacted by the recession at all based on the type of services that they offer. So what we're going to cover in this portion of the segment, and I am going to invite folks to call in and ask questions as I kind of get through my initial comments. If you want to call in, you can call in at 347-945-6873. That's 347-945-6873. We get almost every time I talk to investors and entrepreneurs on a daily basis because we do these events and we offer services to help entrepreneurs figure out what's the right kind of money, where should they go for it, what's the source, what do they need to do to attract it, and then, you know, because of our vast network of investors and lenders, we put programs in place to get them introduced to them. So so the question always comes up is, you know, is there money out there? Are there investors that are actively investing in deals? Is there lenders lending money? And well, I'm not going to talk so much about the lenders today, but they are. We regularly get notices from lenders saying, here's a deal we closed, got any others? So there's definitely money out there. You just got to know where to look for it. And then on the investor side, we believe that there is. I had a question asked to me earlier today, as a matter of fact, on this very topic. And I had two articles sent to me by business associates, that one was in the New York Times and one was in Inc. magazine, the January issue of Inc. magazine, and I think the New York Times was just a few days ago, February 3rd, in fact. The New York Times article was called Angels Flee from Tech Startups, and the Inc. magazine was Angel Investing 2009. And so I decided last night to read these articles and take a look at them, and as a result of that, I ended up writing my own thoughts on them on my blog, myvirtualangelworld.com, myvirtualangelworld.com, and put my comments and linked to both of those articles so you can go read the original works. But what was interesting about it is that these two articles pretty much take opposite positions on the market. on that question. So the question I posed is, so is it good times or bad times for angel investors? What's the story with angel investors? And so what we have found, and I'm going to share some of the experience that we found within our marketplace and then relate it to these two articles. Within our specific marketplace, what has happened is my experience with investors, and I've known investors for a number of years that are active at various times in angel investing, and they're pretty, particularly if they've been doing it for any time, they're pretty sophisticated when it comes to investing. Now, you know, short of just being completely conned by somebody like Matloff, most of these guys are pretty savvy and sophisticated and know how to anticipate the market to a certain degree, try to remove the emotion out of their investments. And so, you know, and they diversify. They have investments in real estate and stocks and bonds and private equity. And so what we saw happen was last year, the market started to get funky back in February. I mean, it didn't happen in November and December. You know, that's when the press caught on. Okay, that's when every Tom, Dick, and Harry that had their life savings in the stock market lost their shirt because they are not savvy investors. If you look at Kiyosaki's levels of Robert Kiyosaki writes about the levels of investors in his cash flow quadrant, and you know most people just sort of hear from their buddy about a stock and put some money in it, or they do something, but they don't really monitor the market. They invest completely on emotion. And they don't really look at any of the statistics on what the company's doing or how it's trending or analyze any of that stuff. And so they are subject to being behind the trends. And when you have very sophisticated investors, they're not always in front of the trends, but they do, and they usually have a team of people that help them. They have wealth managers that help them anticipate some of that stuff because they're busy doing other things and don't want to monitor their portfolio every day. And so we saw a lot of investors. We thought we were going to have a lot of problems at the beginning of this last year because of the market turmoil at that time. We did our first Southeast Private Equity Conference in April. We were very concerned that there was going to be not a good showing at that because the market was so crazy at the time. And, you know, in hindsight, it doesn't seem near as crazy as it right now because nobody remembers it. But it was, we thought we were going to have a really tough time. And, of course, the market, we had a great response to our event and had a great turnout of folks and anticipating the same thing to happen at this one. But what we saw happen, and this is kind of interesting because in the angel flees from tech startups, there is Steve Maggette, a former executive at Intel, has said it perfectly, and I quoted him in my blog. Crashes make liquidity vanish, and venture investing, especially angel investing, runs on liquidity. When the market goes wonky, everyone sits on cash until the situation resolves itself. This makes capital hard to find, and if a company is caught unprepared at the wrong time, that can be the end. many professional angels, they go on to say, many professional angels, those who invest as a full-time job rather than a side project, that's kind of what we're talking about, the really sophisticated ones, are still financing startups, if at a slower pace. They say the best opportunities come during downtimes as companies' valuations fall significantly. The median valuation of startups seeking angel financing fell 25% to $3 million from the third to fourth quarter of 2008. According to AngelSoft, web services for angel investors and entrepreneurs. And so that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing two things. We saw people sit on their money last year. We had a significant downfall in the amount of investments in 2008 compared to 2007. There were still investments getting done. They just weren't being done as frequently, and they weren't as large as they had been in 2007, at least from within our space. But then what we saw happen in November and December is we had new members come into our organization. We had members or people that had not been a part of the organization in a couple of years come back. We had one of our biggest events ever in December, and a whole bunch of companies started due diligence with investors. Now, if investors were panicking and saying, I'm not going to do it, they wouldn't have been doing that. So what we see happening is that they've realized that the market is down, that they took their market out at the top or near the top before it tanked, they're not going to let it sit and make 2 or 3% on their money in fixed income, and they need to build their portfolio. And the chances of a public stock doubling or tripling are very, very low. But the chances of, even though it's high risk, the chances of a private equity stock doubling or tripling are much higher because of the nature of getting in early before, you know, a wholesale price before it goes retail. So it's a very active area that we see investors getting back involved in for three reasons. One, they want to, you know, restore the portfolio of what they did leave in the stock market that has gone down. They need to rebuild that wealth, and private equity, although risky, is the best way to build it in a large way. If you do things, if you do some of the things that investors need to do, and that's making sure you conduct proper due diligence, making sure that you're not the only money in, that you've got some peers that are co-investing with you or working, going with you in on a deal, or you know other people are investing so your money just doesn't go into a black hole, and staying involved in the process of, you know, being willing to help that company succeed if they do, and not just doing it one time. You will lose money in private equity. It's just the nature of private equity and the nature of early stage businesses growing. But if you make five investments, if you use the sort of the VC approach to it, that out of five investments, you know, one's going to completely tank, two are going to make, you know, okay money, you know, or break even and a little over break even. One's going to do moderately good, and one's going to be really great and make up for all the others. And so, you know, that's the way to, you know, kind of manage that. If you're only going to do one investment, though, you know, it's better to keep it in the fixed income. We also see investors getting back involved in the stock market, cherry-picking some real estate deals because, you know, this is, as I guess Warren Buffett keeps getting quoted right now, but, you know, this is a time when the fearful retrench, but people that know how to create wealth, you see this as a great time of opportunity, and it is a great time of opportunity. There are great companies out there. We heard of two of them earlier. They're making money. They're growing. They're in segments that are not really going to be impacted by the recession because the companies have to have their product. And so those are, you know, it's not going to be, you know, 60 days to get your money back, but, you know, within a few years, you know, those are sounder investments than, you know, so it's really making, you know, and taking a little, what we see investors doing is taking a little bit of extra time to make sure about the investment, making sure they're not the only ones. And then going ahead and stroking those checks and taking action, because you can be an economic architect if you take action to actually, you know, put that money to work in helping create the jobs in your local community or wherever that money needs to go, and bringing new innovations to the marketplace, and, you know, participating in the wealth that's going to be created as part of that. So it was interesting in Angel Investing 2009, the Inc. magazine article, it talked about the difference between 2007 and 2008, which is kind of what I talked about. In 2007, as far as my personal experience, in 2007, 258,000+ angels put $26 billion into 57,000+ companies, making those wealthy individuals the single largest source of startup capital, according to the University of New Hampshire Center for Venture Research. This is a nonprofit organization that queries angel investor groups to find out what they invested in, did they reinvest, what stages, what industries, and all those kind of things. And the Network of Business Angels and Investors, the angel investor group that I manage, participates in that survey, so our numbers are in there, okay? And he says, but despite the ethereal name, meaning angel investors, they're all too human. Their money comes from their own investment portfolios, and theirs, just like yours, have been hammered. That's sparking big changes in the way angels invest. Even in a tough economy, deals can still be done, but don't expect them to happen in a hurry. Angels are pretty spooked these days. Even highly diversified investors may be seeing a 20 to 40% decrease in the value of their stock portfolios, according to Michael Gruber, the founder and managing director of Cornerstone Angels up in Chicago. Further complicating matters is that the fact that many angels are entrepreneurs themselves and may be more concerned about with shoring up their own companies than helping you build yours. That's probably where you probably got the biggest retrenching in the marketplace happening. Those guys that are actively building their own companies and like to dabble in doing, and it goes back to what the New York Times article said, that, you know, the ones that are hobbying in it are not going to be investing right now because, you know, it's the ones that are in the business of investing that are still actively investing, and that's really kind of what we see as well. The Center of Venture Research says investments through the second quarter of 2008 totaled $12.4 billion, up 4.2% at the same period in 2007. Okay, we saw a little bit of that because we had almost all the investments that happened in our companies last year that we were working with happened in the first half of the year. Okay, but just 23,000 ventures received those funds, which was almost a 4% drop. And so there more money was going into fewer companies. And that goes to the idea of not being the only money in on that. And so a big part of that is, you know, one of the things that we're trying to address with our fundingplanet.com, which is a new initiative that we're launching, is really how do those investors find each other to be able to syndicate with each other. Particularly, it's easy when you're in a group because you know the other investors that are in it. But when you're not in a group, when you're located or where you reside or the group that's in your area only does technology and you want to invest in consumer products because that's what you know, how do you connect up with other investors so you're not the only money in? And how do you find cool, great, vetted deals? And those are the two, and be able to do due diligence in a timely manner. Those three problems our Funding Planet will solve for investors, and you can get to that at ourfundingplanet.com. So with that said, I'm going to, if anybody wants to call in and ask some questions, you can call in at 347-945-6873. We've got just a few more minutes. There is somebody that's been listening on the phone. I'm not sure if that's an investor or an entrepreneur. They've been on for a while, but I am going to open up their mic just to see if they want to introduce themselves and ask a question, and then if not, then I'll begin the wrap up. Okay, so 9484, you're on the air. You want to introduce yourself? Hello. They were sort of listening. They're either on mute, they're on themselves, or they just want to be shy. Okay, caller, I'm going to put you back on mute. All right, they're being shy. That's okay. Sometimes people just call in and listen because they're not in front of their computer. They're on their way someplace else, or they're in a different kind of a meeting doing something else. So that's perfectly all right. We're happy to have people listen through the computer or listen on live on the air. So as I guess I need to wrap up here, go read about my entire comments at myvirtualangelworld.com, and you can get access to both of these articles on there, and you can hear sort of the Angel Investing 2009 Inc. Article was a much more positive article than the Angels Flee from Tech Startups. It was I think they were just trying to get a really good headline because it really wasn't as negative as you read through the article. I think the headline really was an attention grabber, which it was, because a lot of people circulated it. But here's the bottom line of what I've seen. The retrenching of angels is not as drastic as it was in 2001 and 2002. When we had a real dry up of capital on both angel sides and VC sides. I have not seen that yet. There is still, you know, nobody can predict the future, so of course there's still some uncertainty. Investors are more cautious. They see this as a great opportunity for those that are actively investing to make investments because they can get better valuations than they could have maybe a couple of years ago when there was, I guess our peak in 2007 when there was a lot of money in the marketplace, and so, you know, companies could be bold with some of their valuations. But, you know, there's really good companies will still get funding. and they may take them a little bit longer. They may need to prove their business model out a little bit more. The investors may not be as forgiving in that they need to have, you know, a good advisory team or good management team in place. They need to have, you know, their business model fully vetted. They need to make sure that there's, because, you know, given that there are less investors in the marketplace, not to, you know, there's still money there, it's just less investors, there's more competition for their money, and that's why the valuations are going down. So you've got to make, you got to shine your apple even more so than you would have had before, because there is less money. It's just there's still money there. If you know where to look for it, you get a good team together to help you look for it, you can get access to that capital. And, you know, of course, we provide that through, you know, once we make sure that happens, because the screening process that LaunchFN provides to the companies to make sure they're not wasting their time and money when they try to get in front of these angel investor groups. And then, of course, we have our regular events that have 20 to 30 investors at them. And then, that, like what's happening next week on the 11th. Next one after that is in the second week in second Wednesday in May. But then in between, we're going to have the Southeast Private Equity Conference, which will have, you know, venture capital, angel investors, lenders, investment banks, all kinds of sources of capital for a large group of companies and a large group of investors to come together. And you can get all the information on that on seprivateequity.org. So with all of that said, I think companies should not hesitate to get started in raising their capital, because you have to develop that relationship with the companies. The angels are going to invest because they believe that you can execute on your model, and part of that comes from the black and white of what the document says, but a huge part of it comes from their belief in you as a CEO. And if they believe that you have the ability to execute, they become much more comfortable with actually writing that check. And, you know, if they're going to take 30 extra days to make that decision, then why wait? Start developing that relationship now. Why wait to, you know, till the time is perfect? Because you're still going to have to go through the due diligence part. It doesn't change the amount of time it takes for them to get comfortable with you. So the sooner you start, the sooner you have the potential to raise your capital. So that's pretty much all I have to say today. And I hope that answered the question. You know, is it good times or bad times for angel investors? It's a great time to be an angel investor and put that money to work in creating that innovation and putting it into the marketplace and getting that, creating wealth through this, getting great deals because of the downward pressure on valuation for those companies. For companies, it's, if you need the money, you need to start the process or figure out a way to bootstrap it, so that you can get further along, get closer to cash flow before you go raise your capital, so your valuation, what you're willing to give up, is justified by the valuation of what you've accomplished, and make sure your business model is good. But if you need the capital, don't wait. You know, go ahead and get started. Unless you got a day job, then keep your day job and, you know, wait 6 months to get started. But, you know, we're definitely going to pull this thing out. If we can get the press to quit giving us negative vibes on the marketplace, I think we would be, do a whole lot better, because we're eternal optimists in the entrepreneur world, particularly in the United States. So I'm certain that we're going to pull this out, and we all can be economic architects of our future. So thank you very much for tuning in to Spec Talk Radio. Again, this is Karen Rand. Get more information about all we do at launchfn.com, LaunchFN, or launchfundingnetwork.com. Go check out the blog on myvirtualangelworld.com. And if you're an investor, please go and sign up on our website so you can hear about our upcoming events and get plugged in to attend, and you can do all that through the launchfn.com site. Click on for investors, and thank you very much. Everybody have a terrific weekend, and we will be back next week, exciting show. We're going to be doing a wrap-up of our event on the Angel, the NBA and I, so you'll hear firsthand what was it like with the companies that were presenting and the angel investors that attended. So tune in to hear that next week. And then on the week after that, on the 20th, we're going to be covering. I've got a special guest star, Jessica Mann, that he's going to, we're going to be talking about how do you know if an entrepreneur is an amateur? An interesting way to think that this came about through my responding to her original blog, my responding to her blog, and then posting it out to the LinkedIn community, and we got some great responses, and then we're going to cover those on the 20th. And then I think on the 27th we're going to be doing we're going to be covering carbon tax credits as the next security exchange. I'm going to have a great show on that topic. So thank you for tuning in, and look forward to talking to you or having you listen to us. Talking with you in the coming weeks. Have a great weekend. Onward and upward.